Hello, world. It's the ladies of Nerditude. My name is Jill.
And I'm Francine.
And welcome back.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Greetings.
It's week two of our Indiana Jones spectacular.
Yeah. Our quote unquote back to school situation.
Yes. He's a teacher. It makes sense, sort of. He's a teacher who doesn't teach that often, so it really makes sense for right now. It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So, before we dive into the Temple of Doom.
The Temple of Doom.
anything cool, nerdy update in your life or anything? I mean, you know, it's quarantines, but anything new you're up to?
I am in the middle of watching the 9th season of Called Midwife.
Oh.
It's a period drama.
I didn't realize there were that many seasons.
So many seasons. The 9th season just came out and my mom and I both watch it. So it's something we can like watch together and like talk about. So that's pretty nerdy, I guess.
Adorable is what that is.
And it's really good and I like it and it makes me cry and it's like heartwarming and there's nuns, but like nice nuns.
Oh.
So it's lovely.
Okay.
They're wonderful. And you and I were just talking about Ratched coming out just this past weekend.
Yeah, I was gonna say it hasn't been out for more than like a couple of days, I don't think.
So we're both like really excited to give that a
excited slash terrified.
slash terrified. I know. Asylums, not your thing.
So not my thing.
Anything of the mental hospital variety gives you the Wiggins. I know. You're very brave for even willing to. When
Sarah Paulson.
When Jill texted me and told me that she was excited for this show, I was like, you know what it's about,
I know what it's
right?
about. I mean, it just looks really well done. And that's such an iconic character. I'm curious to see what they do with the backstory of why she is who she is later.
Yeah, like a prequel. And I'm always a little nervous when there's like a prequel
way later.
I feel
like it could be really good or really bad.
Yeah.
So
there could be some retconning that I'm a little bit like, or they could really like take the source material and do very interesting things with it. And I love Ryan Murphy, but he has this tendency to like forge his own path.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me a little nervous when he is not the source of the material. Like he's using someone else's source material.
Mm-hmm.
That has me a little concerned. So we shall see. But that's coming up on my nerd list.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you? What are you doing? Stuff. I know.
Packing. I started listening to So Close to Being the Shit Y'all Don't Even Know.
Is that the title?
By Retta. Which
I
is
love it.
Really good.
Is it an audiobook?
It is.
Nice.
Because I'm still in the middle of moving, and so I have to listen to my books rather than sit and read them right now. So it's narrated by Retta, and man, she's hilarious.
She's great. I love her.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Of course.
Yeah, I say I've been listening to that. I'm re-listening to Infinite Tuesday by Michael Nesmith.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite monkey.
Your favorite monkey of your favorite monkeys ever.
Mm-hmm. So, been doing that. And then when I do get to sit down and not pack, I have been watching a lot of travel shows because I miss traveling.
Yeah.
Been doing a lot of that windowswap.com.
Yes. You're like, look, it's someone else's view. That's not my view.
I was so excited. So I've been doing that and I started watching What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
And I tried to watch Letterkenny.
Because
that's like a big deal, it seems.
I
guess it... I could see it could maybe grow on me, but I don't know that I have that kind of willpower right now. It's like I could see like what they were trying to do, but I don't think I'm the right audience for that or something.
Yeah.
But they had Melanie Scrofano in it, so I had to see at least up till when she was there.
Yeah. But if you feel like you're struggle bussing through it.
Yeah. So maybe I got other things to do.
Yeah. Maybe put it to the side and like revisit it later.
Yeah. So I've been rewatching Instant Hotel instead. Dreaming of Australia.
Right? Dreaming of anywhere but where we've been forever.
Smoke-free somewhere.
Forever. Oh, man. You reminded me when you said about Retta, I'm also midway through the first season of Unobscured.
Oh,
I know, okay. You're not a big Aaron Mankey fan.
I'm not.
I am. And this is his, like, other series where instead of going, like, week by week, episode by episode, it is a season-long exploration.
Okay.
And so season one is all about the Salem witch trials. So he's like...
See, I think he's got cool material and shit, but, like, his delivery kills me. Yeah. And I can't listen.
It's that, like, either you...
That you see. Like... Yeah, this is a podcast. I don't see anything. First of all, I don't know. It's like my thing. I know a lot of people really love it, and I should on paper love his stuff, but yeah. I just don't.
That's fair. Yeah. Sometimes it's just.
There's someone out there who thinks that my voice is annoying. I'm sure. So
no, not possible.
Okay.
Don't at us. We don't want to hear it if you don't like our voices.
I don't care.
But yeah, I've been listening to that, and he actually has like a little team of historians, so it's very different from like the lore series.
Okay.
Because he's kind of like still telling the story, but in a more like, this is the socioeconomic and like political sort of situation, like kind of giving us the historical context for what happened while also telling us what happened. So that's really fun. The second season is about spiritualism in upstate New York. So I'm very excited to get to that
okay.
too.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's been my like listening thing. That's what I've been doing.
Nice.
Yeah. Just trying to expand my mind while having a lot of time and not a whole lot of places to go.
Mm-hmm. And I've just been forcing my boyfriend to watch a lot of classic movies that he has not seen, so I've Heck been yeah. happily revisiting some of that.
Yeah.
Such as Indiana Jones.
Has he watched this one yet?
No, he has not.
Okay. I know he watched the first one because we went to go see it.
Yes. Yeah.
And he saw Last Crusade, so you just, like, skipped over.
Well, yeah. I told him the plot of each, and I said, we're going to watch all three at some point, just face it, but I'm going to let you pick.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I don't really think it matters what order you watch them in necessarily. I mean, like, I would say Last Crusade should be last, of course, but.
Well, and I think the fourth one should be, like, definitely last because there's such a time jump. Or not at all.
But as far as Raiders and Temple of Doom, I don't think it matters.
Not really
at all. So
no, there's like a few things after watching them both, like I don't even know how many times, there's a couple of things that I notice like between the two, but I think like it doesn't, one is set before the other one, but their like filming order is reverse of that, so I feel like it kind of evens itself out. It doesn't,
yeah, it's weird. So
it was an odd choice.
I was like, here's the options. And he was like, well, what would you do? And I was like, I would say Last Crusade.
Definitely. Every time.
So he hasn't seen Temple of Doom yet, but I rewatched it. As if I needed to.
I feel like it's burned into my childhood trauma. We talked about it a little bit when we talked about our childhood trauma episode.
Oh, it's still dark. Unnerving.
It's dark. It I was is. Like, man, for a... PG movie that like helped create PG-13.
I was gonna say this is one of the ones that helped create PG-13.
This and Gremlins, because they're too disturbing, too violent, a little too like bloody, a little too like adult, if you will, but not in the like sexy times way. That was like they needed something in between like PG and R.
Yeah.
So they were not rated PG-13 because it didn't exist when they came out. But they led to the PG-13 rating.
I mean,
yeah.
Back then, I would feel like it should have been R then, honestly.
That's
pretty hardcore on a lot of levels, really.
I think because it had minimal cursing, minimal sexual content, no nudity, nothing like that, they were like, okay, it's fine, PG. Like, not really thinking about...
Yeah, but there's some violence.
The violent, disturbing imagery.
And, yeah, like, just Nightmare Central.
Yeah. Well, and can you imagine, picture this, You are a young parent of, like, let's say a 10-year-old in 1984. You've seen Raiders, which maybe or maybe not you thought that was a good idea to take a child to. But now there's, like, you know.
I would say I was probably about 9 or 10 when I first saw it.
There was a little face melting, but nothing too bad. But
yeah, I remember my parents were like, close your eyes. Indy said to close your eyes.
Right. And now you see, like, there's a second movie that came out. So you're like, woo. Let's go see it, kids. And you, like, pack the kids into the station wagon and you go see, not knowing what it's about because it's new in the theaters.
And I did watch the preview, like the 1984 preview. It is a little bit misleading.
It's misleading, totally. You think it's, like, going to be this, like, swashbuckling adventure movie and you're like, cool, let's go Indy see takes Indy. Yeah.
Indiana, or Indiana takes India. Like,
so you go and you, like, sit down and you... That's the movie that you watch with your 10-year-old children.
Gosh.
Ooh. I was one when this movie, I was like just born, like not even one. And I saw it. I was maybe like 8. And that I feel was like a bad decision on my own part.
I think it was the last one I saw. And I do remember I had to watch it with my dad.
Yeah. Was that your choice or his choice?
It was his choice.
So he had seen it. He knew what you were in store for.
It was like, I don't know. My household was kind of weird in this regard. Like, I was allowed to watch rated R movies when I was 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the first time I watched it with one of my parents. Mm.
Did they give you, like, context? Was that what they
and
they're
like,
for?
If you have any questions, just, you know, whatever. And they're like, you know, this isn't real life, right?
Sure, that's helpful. That's good.
I mean, obviously, still, I have a very active imagination. Yeah. And... Yeah, so I mean, like, I'd watch, like, Eraser.
Oh, God.
That was, I remember, I used
you
to watch
like
that.
8.
Yeah, I watched Eraser, like, all the time.
Wow.
And stuff like that. So, but I remember distinctly, because I had seen Raiders, and I had seen Last Crusade. But when I was a little kid, I thought Last Crusade was kind of boring.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I didn't get it.
It's a lot more, like, relationship-y and less, like,
so then
adventure-y.
Then I'd found out as I was cruising through my parents' VHS collection.
We're old. Get over it.
that they had Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what is this? And my dad's like, okay, like, but I gotta watch it with you because this one
you hadn't seen yet.
This one, and I was like, but Dad, it says PG, and he's like, well,
yeah, I think that lulled a lot of people into like a false sense of security,
and it scared the fuck out of me the first time.
Yeah,
and I don't think I watched it again for a year or two. Like, it was just
a little much. It's disturbing, I think, is what it is. Like, pretty much. All the way through, like, it has very, like, intense images and, like, intense sequences, and they're kind of, like, spread out throughout the movie, and it just, like, it doesn't, to me, being a big fan of all the Indiana Jones films, it's the one that breathes the least. Like, it doesn't feel like it has those, like, moments of relief in it. Like the other ones
do. Yeah, there's like a couple of jokes here and there, but...
They're not that funny.
No. And it's like such a brief reprieve.
Yeah.
It's like a line, and then it just keeps going. And even things that weren't heavily featured in the movie, I remember being scarred by as a kid. Like,
yeah.
Like the idea that someone came and stole all the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it starts off pretty disturbing.
Yeah, it's yeah, and then as an adult, again, I go back and I was like, oh, that's
yeah. Well, and what kind of like
we're just kind of blowing past the like
the child enslavement.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, and this is something I don't understand as like a human. You have access to these like villages full of people, and you decide to enslave the children instead of enslaving the adults. I never understood that.
In theory, would they live longer?
Not if they're working down in the mines. They're not going to live that long.
Or, not that I'm like okay with this, but I'm just trying to think like, they're smaller?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, you know, because like back in British history, they had like the little kids going into the coal mines because they're smaller.
Right.
So it, maybe something like that?
Yeah. I think it's sort of like a call, like a dark callback to like imperialism in India.
Yeah.
Because we see that a lot with like the British influence in the Indian subcontinent throughout this film.
Yep.
So I feel like that's probably what they were going for. And that and like how much more evil it is to enslave children than to enslave adults. Like also, it's kind of
probably easier.
Yeah. They're easier to capture. They need less food and water because they're smaller. I don't know.
That would be what I would think the rationale would be.
Yeah. But it bothered me. Like even as a kid, I remember thinking like, but all those village people, like you just broke their hearts.
Sorry,
village
people. I just imagined. Yeah.
Instead of like capturing all the men, let's say like the grown men, and putting them to work in the mines. Like it kind of didn't make sense to me. And then I just rationalized it as a kid. Like, well, they're evil.
Yeah.
So also, that's why.
Also that.
that must be the reason. Like they just want to continuously be as evil as possible. That's all I had for that as like a reason. But there were just like things about it that like still to this day kind of bother me. And I feel like I need to like rationalize it away because it's like there are weaknesses. There are like flaws in the film itself, like the way it depicts things, the way that the like plot goes. It bugs me.
Well, because I mean, I didn't get it as a kid, but now I watch it again as an adult and I'm like, I'm really not cool how we're depicting Indian culture
100%.
Like if I was, I mean, I'm kind of offended regardless. And yeah. I'm not from India and I don't know a whole lot about it. But when I was a little kid growing up in the middle of nowhere, that's what my initial impression was.
Sure.
So it was scary. Mm-hmm. And it's like so not accurate.
No.
But then you said you were doing some research and the writers were like quote unquote experts.
Yeah. Yep.
In Indian culture. And yep. I was like,
I don't know who they lied to on their resume, but
because like all I remember like as a kid, it was like the parts that burned into my brain were the ears on the statue.
Yep. The dinner. Yeah.
And ripping that dude's heart out and catching people on fire and stealing children and all that stuff. And
pretty much
it's just like, but there's no redeeming qualities of the culture shown at all.
No.
And it is just like, are you kidding me? The elephants all have chains around their necks and stuff. And it's like, which I'm, maybe that's accurate to the time. I don't know. But it's like,
yeah.
Really?
Nothing. It paints
nothing
a bad,
is good here. Yeah. Okay. And also giant vampire bats, which don't exist, but they're here in this movie.
Yeah.
So then I was like, oh, cool. So like, even if you're just out in the jungle during the day,
your life is in danger.
There's a giant vampire bat and then there's snakes and then there's bugs the size of your fucking face. And I was like, why does anybody want to go there? Like the way you're depicting this is, why would I ever want to go to India?
Yeah, that's like scary and evil, basically. Yeah. Like the whole subcontinent is like a thing to be feared. And something that sticks out to me and like stuck out to me as a kid was this is the only movie where he doesn't voluntarily go on the mission until he's already like there. Like he gets stranded in India before ever getting.
I didn't ever really think about that.
And I think that kind of like bugs me. These are things that bother me because it feels like I know this is the place to vent. It almost feels like he wouldn't have chosen to help this village full of people if he hadn't happened upon them after like, I don't know, snow rafting down the like down the Himalayas. I don't even know what that was.
That was real. That's what that was.
So weird.
Because at the bottom of Mount Everest or whatever, there's a jungle.
Totally.
I was like, I don't.
That's how geography works.
Yeah. Also, Mount Everest is not in India, but sure. Yeah.
It's just okay. Like, that kind of bothered me. Was like he finds a reason to like help them and it may not be like the best reason. He's like, ooh, those stones are like really famous, but the whole idea is to like return them to the village so that the village can like prosper again because it's like affecting their life. You know, everything's like brown and they're like crying in the fields and like animals are dying. Yeah. It's like really bad. So the idea of like he's going to go get this famous artifact and like take it to a museum, not really a thing. That's like not what he signed up for. He signed up to return the stone to the village. These people are super poor. They can't pay him. I feel like he wouldn't have volunteered for it.
No. And he tries to get out of it.
And that kind of bothers me.
Well, okay. So here's the one thing that as I was rewatching it, because I don't rewatch this one as often.
Me either.
So
it's traumatic.
Real childhood trauma here. But because I also didn't get as a kid that this was a prequel.
Mm. Yeah. It's not made specifically clear.
So I kind of like that they're showing him before Raiders.
Mm.
And saying before he was only going after this stuff for the money.
Yeah.
Because what does he say? Fortune and glory, kid. Fortune and glory. He doesn't really seem to care.
Yeah.
Right? But then by the time you get to Raiders, he's like, this belongs in a museum. This isn't ours.
Yeah.
Like, don't fucking touch it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And he's not, like, to him, the money is, like, a bonus.
Mm-hmm. Like, but he's by not, the time of Raiders.
He's not going just for the money.
Yeah.
I mean, still a little bit because he goes for the statue, but even then, not... kind of just didn't want Belloc to have it.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like that was a tiny little bit of character development, but I almost feel like it was unintentional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
From the writers.
I think so. I think that they might have been like, okay, we're going to show him like a little bit younger, a little bit like brasher. You know, it also kind of explains like why Sala is not there, why Marcus isn't there. I like to think in my head that like he got tenure between Temple of Doom and Raiders, and that kind of like,
sure,
you know, because then he has a house like in the town, like off campus, you know. Yeah. Like he settled a little bit more.
That's a good point.
Between the two. But it just, it's like I don't see him as doing like knowing the right thing for like himself at this moment in time, and that it kind of just like rubs me the wrong way, where I'm like, ooh, it's just like the beginning of a really bad journey. And I already know that like I feel not right about this movie, like right off the bat. And it just gets worse as it goes on.
It does. I mean, I really like Short Round. And I kind of, as you had suggested before we started recording, I would have liked to have seen Short Round pop up again later.
Me too. We have hope for the fifth one.
Because it, to me, it was like planting the seed. Because in each of the movies, it's like, oh, here's my old friend so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
And you never really find out how we don't know how he ever met Sala. Like,
no.
in the films, we don't know how he met Sala. We don't know how he met, oh my goodness, the Chinese man at the beginning.
Oh, the one that gets shot and dies?
Yeah.
I don't remember his name.
I think his name was Wu, but I could be wrong.
Mm.
But we don't ever know, like, how he met these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I liked that we were like, oh, this is how he met Short Round.
His name is Wu. You're right.
Is it? Yes. Okay. I watched it earlier today.
Good job.
So I was like, I'm pretty sure his name is Wu, but then I didn't want to be wrong. So I was hoping that he would show up later in, like, Crystal Skull.
Yeah, like as a grown-up.
Yeah, and it'd be like, oh, here's my old friend Short Round. Mm-hmm. And we'd be like, I know how you know him, actually. So...
that would have been cute.
It would have, but he's cute for this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think he is one of my favorite parts of this movie. In a movie without a lot of like high points, he is one of my favorites. I love that like classic Steven Spielberg, like father and son, but the dad is like kind of reluctant to like be too father figure-y. Again, I think that ties in well to Last Crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of his thought, like you really get his thoughts on fatherhood in seeing him around a child, even though he doesn't really treat Short Round like a child. He's like, let's play poker. And like, you know,
well, you didn't play poker when you were eight.
I can't say that I did with in the middle of the jungle, like
no, I wasn't in the middle of the jungle. But
you know, and like you drive the car, 8-year-old child. Like, that wasn't my childhood experience, but I do. I appreciate that, like, because up until this point, we've really only seen Indy with adults.
Yeah.
Like, women and men. But it's kind of fun to me to, like, see him with, like, a younger kid. I sort of like, I think that brings out, like, a different side of him. For better and for worse, because he's, like, a little bit mean to Short Round sometimes. He, like, yells at him.
But it's like you said, I think that's what we know from Last Crusade.
Mm-hmm. That's how he understands.
That's how he understands that adults and kids interact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like, Short Round really loves him, you know? He, like, really...
Dr. Jones!
He, like, really goes to bat for him, you know? He's, like, gonna save him. I mean, he's kind of the hero of the movie in a way.
He does save the day.
He does. And that's... I have a real, like, soft spot for him. I really...
Yeah.
He's a sweet little kid.
You know who I don't have a fucking soft spot for?
Yes. Is it Willie?
God.
I know.
Like, what a useless character.
I know. And she, to her... Like, in her defense, Kate Capshaw has come out after the movie, like, years later, and been like, all I was like, a screaming head of blonde hair. Like, she doesn't even like that character.
I know it was another time.
It was.
And I know it was based on another time.
Very true.
Where not everybody's going to be Marion. But I think it's interesting to contrast Marion from Raiders with Willie. From Temple of Doom, because
you say with a sigh, like,
I mean they're opposites.
They are,
right?
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm also like, oh man, this is a prequel, so he had to put up with Willie all through fucking India. And then I am in my head, he's like, fuck this, and he, like, leaves her in Delhi or whatever. And then he goes home, and then he eventually runs into Mary, and he's like, oh, thank God. Like, yeah, you're so not Willie. Stop screaming.
Well, and, like, carrying on the idea of, like, why this movie bugs me, she is the only female companion throughout all four films that is not, she doesn't sign up to be there.
That's true.
So it gives her this, like, platform from which to complain the entire time.
It's not funny.
It's not funny.
And as a woman, I find it offensive.
Yeah. I mean, I get it, because she is, like, this woman from a small town, and she, like, thinks that she lives this, like, big star, like, glamorous life. She is not the camping type.
And that's fine.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, these people exist. I get it. But the reason, like, that character offends me is she doesn't have a redeeming quality.
Not really.
She seems like all she ever wants is diamonds and money.
And to go home.
And she's creeping on a fucking kid for his money.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
And
her relationship kind of, with the Maharaja is very disturbing.
It's a little, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't really like how she seems to continually be putting down Indian culture, even though it's not,
even though the movie as a whole is doing that too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, she, like, faints with the food they give her and stuff like that. Do I want eyeballs in my soup? No, but I'm sure that, like, come on. And all she does is scream. There's not a moment in this movie where she does anything where I can go, oh, she could take care of herself, or she screams a lot, but at least she can insert something here. But
she just
screams a lot. The only thing she did was flip a switch, literally.
That was helpful in the moment. But she screamed and complained her way through it. So kind of like.
And it was just to be part of the creature feature, part of the Indiana Jones adventure. And yeah, she was just there to be his Bond girl, basically.
Yeah,
she's just there to be pretty and to scream and for him to save somebody. And it's just, she's just the opposite of Marion.
She's a classic, like damsel in distress. We talked about last time how, like, Marion isn't that. And that's what's, like, so refreshing about her and, like, so cool about her. This is, like, because this movie came out after the first one, it feels like a step backwards.
It does.
Even though it's not, because it's a prequel. Well,
because I think that's the thing, is it's like, I already know that we're capable in this franchise of having badass women, okay? Mm-hmm. And hey, if you want to do your hair and you want to do your makeup and you're just more into the quote-unquote girly things in life, cool, good for you. I'm not saying you can't do that, but, like, it makes me long for Buffy, who loves to be a cheerleader and loves to do her hair and stuff, but she can still take care of herself. Mm-hmm. Whereas Willy is just a decoration.
Yeah.
And she doesn't seem to want to be anything more than that. And it just kind of breaks my heart for that character. And I'm kind of glad that Kate Capshaw said that. Because, like...
Yeah. She's, like, really not proud of that role.
I mean, she got a husband out of it, right?
She did.
Because isn't that where she met Steven Spielberg? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's nice.
Their daughter is in the fourth movie for a second. We'll talk about that when we get there.
Okay.
She's in, like, I did not one realize scene. That. Yeah. So... I definitely don't like Willy. She is my least favorite of all of the, like, women in the Indiana Jones franchise.
Oh, yeah.
By far and away, she's my least favorite. I have some stuff against Ilsa, too, in the next movie. But
well, yeah, but that's not the same.
It's different.
Yeah.
I definitely feel differently about them. And the thing that gets me and the thing that bugged me as a kid, too, upon many, many rewatches, why Willy? Why? Do you go down that creepy ass tunnel? Why? Is it so that you can, like, not be alone? Is it because she was, like, afraid to be by herself in, like, the room? I don't know what it is that, like, makes her take that literal step, like, crossing from the palace into the, like, creepy, you know, bug tunnel.
Wasn't he calling for her or something?
She seems to, like, just kind of follow him in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but why? She'd be like, I am freaking staying right here. She tries to kind of say that, but then she
goes.
You're
right. You're right. Okay. I caught it a little twisted around in my head. But yeah, you're right. She follows him in. Because for some reason in my head, I was like, he's further down the tunnel. And he's like, come on.
But
that's not right.
Even if he was like, come here. Look at this crazy, like, carving on the wall or, like, whatever.
I'm staying behind. Sorry.
Say no. If you're really, like, because to me, that is the turning point in the film where, like, we go from the beautiful palace with all of its, like, sort of cultural horrors. And yes, there are assassins and all of that. But we really, like, step into the sort of, like, dark underworld.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand her, like, desire. I mean, I kind of, like, they sort of try to, like, explain it where she's like, you're not leaving me here by myself. Like, I'm coming with you. But I'm kind of like, it feels like just stubbornness to me at that point. And I kind of wish that she had stayed.
It doesn't make any sense. I would have bought it a little bit more if, and maybe that's why in my head I imagined that, was that, like, when he and Short Round get trapped in that little room, if she had heard them yelling. Because then that would have redeemed her a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if she had, like, heard them in distress and, like, gone to help them.
Yeah.
Sure. That's plausible.
And I just don't know that, I mean, she's where she wants to be. She's in a palace and all this stuff, and she's got her apples and whatever.
Yeah. I don't really
know why she'd want to leave, because they weren't trying to kill her.
No, they didn't really seem to care that much about her.
They didn't really seem to care.
No one sent an assassin after her. They sent an assassin after him.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. He's our hero. He's, like, you know, he knows too much. He's too smart. He's, like, going to figure it out.
Well, and he's not going to flip as easy as the British guy did.
Yeah.
Which I was glad they kind of put that in the film a bit about the British occupation and how not cool that was.
Yeah.
But yeah. There's so many things that you just kind of stand back and you go, wait a minute.
Like, what a weird
choice. Why would they do that?
Yeah.
It's just a badly written.
It has a lot of
story overall.
It has a lot of, like, strange choices, like, narrative choices. I think the places where they, like, try to insert, like, sound effects or, like, funny moments are weird. And I get that, like, Steven Spielberg was trying to insert humor because he felt that the movie was really dark.
Well, you needed some humor, but it wasn't done correctly. Yeah,
I don't feel like that was the way to do it.
That's what I mean, is, like, it was dark, it was heavy, but, like, even in Raiders, I mean, there was properly inserted humor. Mm-hmm. And here it just kind of was, like, in weird spots.
Yeah, it feels almost crass. The humor feels like it's inappropriate humor. Because I don't know if it's, like, partially because of what's going on around, like, you know, everything that's happening, or if they're just bad jokes, or like both. I don't really know. It's just, it feels like when someone is inappropriately funny.
Yeah.
Like telling a joke at a funeral where it's like not appropriate.
Right.
And that kind of bothers me. Another thing that really, really bugs me about this movie, and I swear, I love Indiana Jones.
But you can love something and critique it.
This movie just, it gets my goat in so many ways. The mixing of cultural traditions that are not part of Indian culture at all.
Yeah.
Like all the voodoo stuff.
That was my thing. Like, now granted, I still don't know a lot about Indian culture.
There's no voodoo.
But I was like, I don't think that they have a version of that.
No. There is like sympathetic magic and things like that. Yeah, but there's when they
whipped out the doll, I was like,
there's no like voodoo doll with pins in it.
That's okay.
No. And that goes for the like temple guards too, in the like corpse paint. The tall guys with the white faces.
I never thought about that.
What is that? It's like somebody read a bad book on voodoo, like a really inaccurate bad book. That's
like who's the guy with the top hat?
Papa Legba.
Yeah Okay, I can never remember his name.
They just like threw these things in, and I think they were like, well, skulls and like human sacrifice,
just
and
trying to make it look scary. Yeah, but
and I don't I think they were going for, in my optimistic opinion, they were going for like a classic 1930s like white zombie kind of feel to the film, because that's when it's set.
I think you're right.
And it makes it seem more exotic, right? Like if you take all of these like very othered traditions.
With my very, very limited knowledge, I do know that wasn't Shiva had the ears around her neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I was like, okay, it's not
in some traditions.
But sure. Right. Yeah.
In some traditions, right? Yes.
But yeah, I don't know a whole lot about it. But to me, what very little I do know about Hinduism and stuff, I was like, I don't recognize any of this.
No. And I think that they were going for like a look at how evil they are. They're like perverting their own religion. Because like the first time we see Molaram, he has the headdress, has like cow horns on it.
Yeah, which was very Satan.
Something that Hindus would never do.
I did not get that either.
Never, ever, ever.
Okay, you're right.
And drinking blood and like eating bugs and like, no. Just up and down the line, like that would never happen. So I think that what they were going for was like, it should be obvious from the very beginning, from that first dinner, from the first time we see him, that like these are not godly Hindu people. And that kind of sets up like the ending where Indy tells Molaram that he's like angered Kali and Shiva, and that's why he's going to be like punished, kind of like calling the wrath of God down on him because he's so evil, and the cult is so evil. But it can get really lost. Like I kind of want to see where they were going and be like, I see what you were trying to say, but you didn't make it clear. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I don't know. But that like, and pulling the like Tuggy cult into that also, I think like helps that case, because that was like a very dark, like shameful thing about Indian history. So like, I understand like saying, like bringing that name, kind of calling that out, you get the idea that they're like the bad guys, not only of the movie, but of like the whole of like the culture. They're brainwashing these people. They're like evil. Mm-hmm. They're worshiping evilly.
Yeah.
And that's going to be bad for them in the end, which calls to mind the first movie.
Right.
Right. Like if you do wrong things with power, then you get punished. Mm-hmm. Cool.
You get eaten by crocodiles. Apparently.
Also,
I don't think they have those in India.
I don't think so. But those were also Florida alligators.
Well, that was the thing. There was a whole lot of confusion.
Those weren't even crocodiles.
Because I watched a lot of Animal Planet, and I was like, okay, but I think they're supposed to be crocodiles. But then,
yeah.
Then I was like, I think those are in the Nile. For sure, but I don't, think, continent. I don't think they're in, but they would have the whatever the one is with the really narrow snout.
Oh, yeah. Those things.
Yeah. You know what I was trying to say.
Yes.
Not caimans, but something similar, but not that big.
Yeah. Like a water-dwelling lizard kind of situation.
Yeah.
But it's not going to eat people. Like, it's not going to be this, like, man-eating, like, gator thing. Motif.
You don't know.
I guess I don't know.
Apparently, according to these experts.
But yeah. There were just, like, there's just things about this one that, like, bother me more than the inaccuracies of, like, the other movies. This one just, like, really gets me.
The other thing that kind of takes me out of this movie a little, and I kind of feel like it's never really explained in any of the movies.
Do tell.
How many damn languages does Indy speak?
Yeah.
Because...
he's amazing.
I mean, you were an archaeologist. How many languages do you speak?
No. And especially of a place, like, archaeologists...
you specialize in a place. Yes,
exactly. Like, right? I could see if he was like, I specialize in Indian, like, culture. Okay, then maybe you speak, which they weren't even speaking an Indian language. They were speaking Sri Lankan because they filmed it in Sri Lanka. So the language that they're speaking isn't even an Indian dialect. That's beside the point. He just, like, speaks it so fluently and, like, understands it so easily.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
That, and I think that, like, took me out of the movie because in Raiders, he's established he doesn't speak Egyptian.
Yeah. And which, Sala is there to help.
And Sala is there to help. And then I was like, okay, I don't know if they're speaking Cantonese or Mandarin when they're in Shanghai.
Yeah.
But he's speaking...
I think it was Cantonese, but okay, I'm not positive.
Whichever. He's speaking that language pretty well.
Yeah.
And Lao She even says, oh, I didn't even know you spoke my language here at Club Obi-Wan. Because, you know.
You got to throw it in there.
Yeah. And he was like, only on special occasions.
Yeah.
But, like, I was like, okay, maybe if you knew you were going to go to China.
Yeah. And he has friends, like, Short Round and Wu.
Clearly, who, he's been there before.
He's, like, got, like, connections.
He probably knows enough to, like, get around, and he knew he was going to be dealing with this, so he brushed up. Okay, I'll buy it. But then, yeah, he's clearly not been to India or Sri Lanka before.
And even if he had.
Because at first he's like, I don't understand what you're saying. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, no, my ear has adjusted. Now I understand.
And that fucking threw me off as a kid when they're speaking in, I guess, Sri Lankan. And then all of a sudden the guy is speaking in English and Willie's like, what? I was like, I don't understand. Wait, what language are they speaking?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very confusing.
And for, like, a rural, because we're supposed to gather that this is, like, a rural...
yeah, this is the middle of nowhere.
Indian village.
Yeah. This is where Mowgli...
yeah,
like,
came from.
Like, I'm not that it's the same story, but, like, that kind of little village.
Like, at the edge of the kind of, like, wilderness.
Yeah.
Because they don't travel that far to get into the jungle, to, like, go through the jungle to get to the palace.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... it doesn't strike me as, like, a month-long trip.
Yeah, because, like... the only other story that I know about The Jungle Book and I know about Rikki Tikki Tavi. Mm. That's, like, the only other stories out of India that I've ever heard about. So in my mind, it's like, yeah, Mowgli's village would be, like, on the very edge of civilization,
yeah,
I guess.
And you see that.
And yeah, and they're, like, in like, very deep.
Yeah.
No one knows they're there, almost.
So it's sort of like, are they playing to British colonialism? Why this, like, village elder... speaks English at all? Is it just
he speak English? Or because when I rewatched it today, the impression that I got was he is still speaking in Sri Lankan and Indy is, like, translating for him, but they didn't want to do subtitles or something.
Yeah.
Because everybody because he switches back and forth, but then Indy's like, "Oh, they took the children." But earlier he was like speaking in English,
yeah,
with, like, no problem.
Yeah, it's a weird decision.
But it seemed like he was translating.
Yeah, it's an odd decision to me. I think, again, maybe I'm, like, retconning or, like, you know,
it's weird.
Headcanoning this, but, like, it seems to me that we're supposed to see the influence of, like, British colonialism even this far out.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
I think
that was just the impression that I got. And see, I see that's how badly written it yeah, is, though, because really... you and I just had a totally different movie experience.
Yeah, like, and they didn't really explain. They didn't really care to like explain it.
To me, I was like, "Wow, we're not going to put subtitles. We just are going to pretend he's speaking another language."
Yeah,
and you're like, "No, it's because he's got the colonialism." I don't know what the answer is.
Well, and I can tell you from like a behind the scenes perspective, the actor, he was one of the only Indian actors that wasn't dubbed. And he did not speak English. Steven Spielberg would say his lines to him, and then he would
just
repeat.
So he had no idea what he was saying.
No idea what he was saying.
Oh, I don't like that.
He looks the part, and he is
he's really good.
Amazing.
But to me, I just don't like when people don't know what they're saying in a film.
He didn't.
He could have been totally saying something that he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't love that decision that they made from a behind the scenes perspective either. The reason that they filmed in Sri Lanka, I also know, is because they tried to pitch filming in India.
They didn't like
it. And the Indian government was like, hell no.
That's fair.
That to me should have been a clue that like maybe they weren't.
I did not know that, but
yeah,
that's fair.
They were like, you can't like say Maharaja. You can't like, because there are just certain things about like.
Yeah.
British colonialism and like the way that Indian society was in the 80s when they were like trying to pitch filming there, that they like required all of these changes to be able to like film there. They wanted like more of a delineation between Indian people and like the villains of the movie.
That's fair.
And they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to make those changes.
Makes me like this even less.
So.
Because, again, it goes back to, like, the impressions that we got as kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
Yeah. It gives you a bad. It paints a bad picture.
It does.
It paints a bad picture.
All around.
And you said it exactly right when you were like, there are very limited things that you had exposure to. So this became, like, a defining thing for you about, like, that whole country. That whole like area of the world.
Yeah.
Because you trust the film.
And we never see Delhi.
Mm-mm.
We only see evil rural jungle craziness with massive vampire bats and stuff.
I don't think it's helpful either to see like this very poor village and then this like really opulent palace. You get the idea that like people are either dirt poor or like super rich and there's like no shades of gray in there. And then to make like the super rich people the evil people and the super poor people the like victims, woof, that sets up such a rough relationship.
Yeah. Wow.
Especially in a place like India where the caste system was very real for a very long time.
Still kind of is from what I understand.
There's like all of this sort of cultural baggage that this film brings up for me that I don't think they were sensitive to when they made it.
No.
And it kind of bugs me.
As it should. It should bug everybody.
You know, and I do a lot of like kind of thinking about it in my head, like maybe this is what they meant. Maybe this is what they were going for. But I feel like that shouldn't be my job as the viewer to, like, make excuses for the film.
I mean, even right down to when they're riding the elephants to the palace and Willy dumps her perfume all over the elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, ha-ha, what a funny moment that the elephant, like, sprayed her with water, ha-ha. But it's like, so you're even, like,
disrespectful.
Bitching about the transportation and... everything smells and you, the Western white lady with your perfume, like, come on.
Yeah. It's not a good look.
It's not.
It's just not a, and I get that, like, she's supposed to be annoying. She's supposed to be
very annoying.
She's very successful at that. So it's like putting the words into her mouth made it like, okay, because she's contemptible and like, we're supposed to understand that she's wrong. And I think about like that first scene where they're eating in the village and Indy's like eating and she's like, I can't eat this. Like, I can't. And he's like, it's respectful to eat the food that they're giving you.
Yeah. This is more than they eat in a month or something.
Yeah. So like, I think that's them trying to set up that like, she's a fish out of water. She doesn't understand. Like, the stakes are, this is just like outside of her understanding. So she's going to be like a bitchy, like entitled.
I just can't with her. It's just awful.
It's rough.
The other scene, like, it didn't bother me so much as a kid, but then when I got older, I was like, what the fuck is going on? Was the mine cart chase?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you ever been on a mine cart?
I have not.
But that is not how that works.
Even in India? Is it not how it works?
Maybe it worked that way in India in the 30s. I don't know. But
what bothered you about it?
So, like, how it jumps the tracks.
Sure.
And still lands and keeps going. Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't fucking think so. Secondly, they're going over, like, lava and stuff. Everybody's going to sweat to death.
True.
Slash, how is the track still intact?
Yeah. Fair.
Over that.
How did the water get all the way out the thing when it went through lava tunnels?
Yeah, they would have been steamed
to
death.
This is my question.
And then when he stops it with his foot, I was like, there is no fucking way.
But it burned his shoes.
Yeah, it burned his shoe, but like, you know how heavy those are?
I don't. I've like
never. They're so like. So heavy. Mm. Especially the old school ones. I mean it's just like solid all metal. There's no way he stopped that, even if he caught both of his shoes on fire. You're not stopping that. Like,
so is there a way for like kids to push them if they're that
heavy?
Take
a lot of them. I don't know, but like parts of it I was just like, this is not. I know it's a movie, suspension of disbelief, but it was like, you know, if you break the brake on that, like, I don't think you're going to stop. Like, I would have believed it more if he was like, oh, fuck, and they bailed out.
They bailed out, yeah.
I was like, but again, oh, how funny, he's looking for water, and then the whole flood comes, but.
It's that ill-timed humor, why?
And even as a kid, when they lower that poor dude down into the pit.
Yes.
And they pull the cage back up, I was like, how did the cage not melt?
Dark magic. Is my answer.
It's adamantium, I guess.
How does he still scream when his heart is in someone's hand 30 feet away? It's dark magic. That's the reason for
why
that.
Why did he catch
malarkey.
On fire, but Willie didn't?
Dark magic. Dark magic malarkey. I don't think it. They weren't focusing on physics or like realism.
No, and I just like, and but even if I'm going to suspend my disbelief of science,
a lot.
Even if I'm like, yeah, okay, vampire bats and stopping carts with your foot and whatever.
Reaching into someone's chest and pulling out their heart.
And the list goes on. Florida gators are in India. Sure. Okay. There's just like other parts of like the mythology of what they're doing that I don't follow, because like you said, it part of it's like voodoo,
yeah.
But then they bring up you know, Shiva and Kali, and my very light grasp of who those deities are. I'm like, but why? Okay, but like, why would you do this thing? Like, what does Kali do for you in return? Yeah. Or I'm just very confused. And where exactly did these, like, why do you have these rocks? Like, why does a village have one, but they're all three supposed to be together? Mm-hmm. It was very confusing. And what about the other places where they got the other two stones?
That's a good question.
We never find out about that.
Yeah, that is a question that kind of haunts me. Those two stones fall in the river with the gators.
Yeah, and so I was like, so are there two other villages that like got boned out of this? Did they lose their faith in their deity because of this? Like,
yeah.
What
so
happened?
My headcanon.
Okay.
Is, and I think they say it in like one little throwaway line.
Do they? Okay.
Maybe. Maybe. Kinda sorta. Is that the other two stones, the ones without the lines on them? Mm-hmm. Were not stolen. They were found at some point in the past.
Oh.
And so it's about finding the rest of them and like increasing the power.
Okay.
So they really only stole the one stone from this like sacred village, kind of like this blessed village that's now lost that blessing. It's very convenient that Indy shows up there. If there's the one village that has the stone and it's been stolen, it's very, very like contrivancy that he shows up there. And then, you know, I kind of like hearken to the village elder saying like, this wasn't an accident. It wasn't chance. You were brought here to save us.
Yeah.
So, like, given all the mythological and, like, mystical elements of the Indiana Jones movies, like, okay, maybe that really did happen. Maybe he really was, like, destined to go there and, like, save them. And then I kind of go, like, ugh, but white savior complex.
I was going to bring that up, too, was, like...
Yeah. It's rough. To see that, like, that image at the end where all the children, like, run back into the village and you see, like, the two tall, like, white people like just kind of like yay they saved everyone. I'm just it bothers my brain. I don't like that imagery. I don't. And I appreciate like Short Round being there with the keys to like help the kids like escape. Mm-hmm. I think that is like a better image to me.
Oh yeah.
Than like them sort of like bringing prosperity back to the downtrodden villagers, like bringing hope back with the stone.
Yeah,
it's a little rough.
Yeah, it's just, well,
I don't love it. I don't, there's just a lot of things that kind of, I wish that they hadn't decided to make quite as many departures as they did.
And I think even when I was a kid, this was a problem I had with it, is because again, I saw Raiders and Crusade first.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but I thought Indy fought Nazis. Mm-hmm. And I thought Indy went after Christian mm-hmm. artifacts. Not that he can't go after other things, of course. Right. But, like, that was how they had set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they had set it up in Raiders and later in Crusade, it was, like, acknowledging Jehovah is there.
Yeah.
He's real. Okay. And he, like, supports Indy. Cool. So then I was confused when I watched Temple of Doom, because I was like, is he an expert in all world religions? I'm confused. Are all of the gods cool with him?
He's
are
we just saying, awesome.
Are we saying that they all exist? What's happening? Yeah. It was just kind of weird. And then I did not grasp that this was a prequel mm-hmm. until I was older, because the only way you really know is that quick little 1930 yeah. whatever.
And you have to remember that Raiders yeah. was like 1938 to even know that this was 1935. Yeah, because
after the events of Raiders, I was like, but World War II is going on. Because like the first time I saw it, I don't think I caught that. And also I was a little kid, so mm-hmm. I didn't know my history well enough.
These movies are rated PG, yo.
Yeah. So I was like, Why are we ignoring the world war going on yeah. over here and having this adventure in China and India mm-hmm. and Sri Lanka? But then, yeah, if Wikipedia hadn't told me that, like, oh, well, they didn't want to do anything with the Nazis being the bad guys again, so they just decided to do a prequel.
Yeah.
And they decided to put it in India.
Because it was different.
It really throws off the rhythm of the series, because I think the reason it doesn't quite compute in my head even now is you've got two movies that deal with the Christian religion
mm-hmm.
and one that deals with quote unquote Hinduism.
Yeah. Very loosely.
Right. So, but if you would have had like in Raiders, he deals with the Ark. And then in the second one, he deals with a much better situation in India. And
something
then,
else.
And then in the third one, something having to do with another part of the world and right. or a different religion, I would have been like, ah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But it just seems like a really like, oh.
Mm. It's like whatever they read yeah, that they decided it, was cool.
Because, you know, and then the fourth one.
I know.
Is different
it goes
well.
Off the rails.
And so I was like, wait a minute. I don't yeah. understand, because you're not following the Indiana Jones formula, as it were.
Yeah. I kind of get the idea that he is like the just sort of like so heroic and like so the textbook fictional archaeologist.
Yeah.
That there's this idea that like it's a world trotting, like globe trotting person who just knows about everything. Which is kind of impossible.
What an archaeologist does, right?
That's sort of impossible. Like, even the classes that he teaches, the little snippets that we see of his classes, I'm like, but what is your expertise? Like, what are you actually, like, what is your research?
Tomb raiding?
He's really a lot like Tomb Raider. You know, it's like he's teaching a class on the Neolithic, and then he's teaching a class on like the Exodus, and then he's also talking. I was like, what? But are he's you an like Egyptian the, archaeologist?
He's the archaeology department at the University of Chicago.
He just teaches all the classes.
Whatever.
They're like, well, you have tenure now, so you have to teach everything. Sorry, not sorry. It just, it's sort of like, I think it would have been a stronger series had they decided to say, like, he is a biblical archaeologist. Like, his father, we'll get to that next time.
Right.
But, like, his dad has a specific...
A very specific...
Concentration.
Yeah.
That would have made him a stronger character to me.
And I think that's part of what trips me up is I'm like, but I'm thinking this is his specialty is, like, the Christian religion.
Yeah.
But now he knows everything about what's going on over here.
It's even a stretch to say, like... Raiders is an Old Testament and Last Crusade is a New Testament biblical archaeology. Yeah. Like, even that's a stretch because that's like a long period of time and very
different.
It's a lot
of begatting.
And like a very different culture to be like, if archaeology is a study of culture through like material remains, how much does this man know? Not only does he know every language and every religious tradition and like every cultural tradition, but he knows like all of world history, like everything. Equally well.
I would have even gotten into it a little bit more if he'd showed up and been like, I don't know what this guy's saying. And then
they needed like a translator.
Yeah. Or, you know, and then he'd be like, what stones? Or like he has no idea what's going on. Or he's like, I think I read something about that when I was an undergrad once upon a yesteryear. Like, I would have liked for him to struggle a little bit more instead of just instantly having the answers and being the white savior who's like, oh, I totally know everything here. It's like, no, you just got dropped out of a fucking airplane.
Where you did not intend to go.
And you just happened to stumble into a part of a country that you've, from our understanding, never been to.
Yeah.
And you just happened to speak that language and you happened to know this legend and you happened to know your way to Pangkot.
Mm-hmm. They did have the guides with them.
They did.
But then they peaced out.
But he was like, but Pangkot's not on the way to Delhi. And it was like, so wait, have you been here before? Or are you like...
He just spends his ample free time studying detailed
he's
maps.
He's just like a map dork. Yeah. He's like, I don't...
Of the entire world. Like, everywhere.
Yeah. So things like that, I was like, wait. So, but then in which case, do you need a guide?
Yes.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
It was all... It's all very... Like, wait, what's going on here?
There's a freaking great horned owl in the jungle.
Yeah, what the hell was that? You know, that great horned owl of Sri Lanka.
I can't explain it. I don't. It's
and the fucking Florida gators. And the
not to mention
bats.
The snake that gives live birth. Not a thing.
After it was cooked?
Not a thing.
What was that? Even as a kid, again, with the too much Animal Planet, I was like, wait a minute.
Magic.
I was like, this doesn't work on several levels. First of all, snakes come out of eggs. Secondly, if you cooked, let's just say they hatched and you put them back in there.
They wouldn't
and
slither.
You stitched it all up and you cooked the snake.
Because there was steam coming out of the snake, right? It was definitely
so
cooked.
I was like,
that's
not, wouldn't you have cooked the baby snakes too?
You just made them angry so that they really, like, burst out as soon as you, I don't know.
It's bursting with flavor?
I don't know.
I don't, and then I don't know that, again, I don't know, but is there a place where they eat live baby snakes like that?
Not in the Indian subcontinent.
Okay, because maybe that's a thing somewhere that I'm not aware of, because I know there's places where people eat bird nests.
Yeah, and
it's totally
bugs,
a thing.
Like, the brains that they eat and the tarantulas that they eat, like that is all real food ways. Those are all real food traditions. Not there. Not in that part of the world.
I was going to say, and the bug part to me, that made me think of like South America.
Yeah. South America, other
parts of
areas
of
Asia. Sure. Absolutely. But you're talking about like devout Hindus would be largely vegetarian.
Right.
They would be way more likely to eat the fruit platter that we see later than any type of living thing. Because of the karmic cycle.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that idea of like doing no harm.
The fucking guy at the dinner who's like, as obnoxious and disgusting about eating everything as he possibly can be, that's also very off-putting for a fucking lot of reasons. Yeah.
In my head, I tell myself that they were trying to get rid of the white people by scaring them. That's not
interesting. Okay.
Food that they would have normally eaten, and that's not, they like, you know, pulled out all the scary.
Indy's also when they cut the snake open, why wasn't Indy like, oh my fucking god, and he like runs out.
He kind of does like jump back from the table.
Yeah, but I would expect him to be like,
yeah, he's just nope out of there. Like,
he's like, good luck with your stones. Like, I'm out.
Bye. yeah. So I, in my head, like, I'm like, okay, they like were as offensive as possible on purpose to try to like get them out. Then when that didn't work, they resorted to like attempted murder.
That escalated quickly.
Which again just like shows their sort of like evilness up front. But that's me doing a lot of mental gymnastics to try to get the plot to work.
That's all this movie is mental gymnastics for so much of it.
It's tough. It's really tough. And I, you know, I think on the plus side, this movie has the scariest villains of any of the Indiana Jones films.
Definitely.
Hands down, these guys are scarier than Nazis. I know
Molaram still scares you, so.
He does. I get very nervous when, even saying his name during the episode. I was like, like, it made me really nervous. He is a really, really great villain. And I hand it to them for casting an actual Indian man to play that part. He was like really, he went on to have a great career after that, playing like villains in Bollywood films because he was such a great villain. He had also,
I didn't know that,
never shaved his head before until that role. And then they were like, it's so iconic. It looks like so evil and so great.
With that red.
The paint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was like, I could never figure out if that was like.
It's paint.
Okay.
But.
It's textured. So I thought it was maybe his hair.
There's a really good documentary about the behind the scenes making of each of the films.
I did not know.
It's really good.
There goes the rest of my weekend.
And I think like he decided to like continue shaving his head and like take those villainy parts that he didn't really think that he could like do. So it's. There's like some good things that came out of this film. And me as a child personally, like it made me look up like more Indian culture. And then it kind of like retroactively made me upset with the movie, but it gave me that like thirst for knowledge. Like, oh, all this stuff that seems like really exotic and like sort of scary and like mysterious and weird. Like,
see, I didn't get that. It did. I was just like, oh man, I don't ever want to go to India. That was basically the thought process that I had as a kid. And I never really learned a lot about it until college. And even then, I didn't really learn a lot about it. It was that I had some classmates that were from India. Mm-hmm. So I learned a little bit there. And I had my first taste of Indian food and things like that. But
you were in college, really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you grew up in a really small town. There wouldn't have been any.
Yeah, so.
Like that, Indian families. Like
all I knew was Temple of Doom, Rikki Tikki Tavi, and The Jungle Book.
Which is not a lot to go on, culturally speaking.
Right. And that was it. Yeah. And so I had just like in my head kind of like written it off as like, man, I don't ever want to go there. There's giant vampire bats and gators. Right. And like,
the whole place is a jungle and poverty and it's scary.
It's just no, thank you. Mosquitoes everywhere, I'm sure. From the way they're depicting it and these giant bugs, like I just, and bugs are not my deal. So
yeah,
I didn't really learn anything about it. And I took a couple of anthropology classes in college. And that was when we learned a little bit more about like Hinduism. Mm-hmm. And I've always been really interested in mythology, but to be honest, also where I was, we didn't have any books about Indian mythology and it just never occurred to me to look it up online.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, if you don't go out of your way like you did to learn more, it leaves a very bad impression on
that is definitely
kids
true.
That are watching it. Because if I saw it for the first time now, I'd be like, this can't be right.
BS. Yeah.
Or I'd want to like know more about that cult. Like, is that a real cult? And I'd be looking it up and everything. But it's bad writing, bad lots of things.
I'll give them the set design. was super good.
Give them my nightmares.
Very iconic set design. I liked the character of Short Round was really good. I think the character of Molaram was really good.
He's very scary.
As much as he's like fulfilling the role of a villain.
I did want a little more backstory on him.
Hmm. I think it makes him scarier to like not know. He's like more mysterious.
I guess, but I wanted to know more about like how did he even get into the palace?
And, yeah. Like where did it start?
Is this like
start?
A Rasputin situation? That's what I wonder.
Probably. Sort of. Kind of. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's what I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, it's my least favorite Indiana Jones film at the end of the day. And it's weird because it's the first one I ever saw. But it is my least favorite, even counting the fourth one.
Damn.
I know. That's
okay, no, I've
something.
Only seen the fourth one one time.
Oh, you have to watch it again and again.
I will watch it one more time for our next episode.
And that's it?
And that's all I plan to watch it because... Mm. So I have the Blu-ray set and it's got mm-hmm. all four. So I have it, but did I watch that in theaters? No. I think I Redboxed it because a friend of mine at the time had gone to it opening night thinking Indiana Jones.
I did the same.
And then she came
finally.
Back. And I had to work or something. There was some reason I couldn't go. And she came to work the next day and she's like, oh my god, I want my money back. And I was like, aw, man. So I waited until it was on Redbox. And then I watched it one time and I was just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I put it ahead of Temple of Doom because of the cultural sensitivity.
Okay.
Relative to the two movies.
I can see that, okay.
And I'll take Soviets over like fake Indian Tuggy cult members.
Okay.
Like, as of...
I'm going to keep this in mind. Mentally, right now, Crystal Skull is at the bottom because it was so fucking weird.
It was weird. This movie's weird, too.
But, like... Okay, I can't say too much. Aliens.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that dude from the History Channel is all I ever think about.
The guy with the hair.
Yeah.
So, that's fair.
I'm just kind of like, okay, this is really, really weird. So...
That's fair.
Okay. But maybe... After I watch it a second time,
give it
I'll
another
rearrange.
Chance. Give it another chance. This one is at the bottom of the list for me.
Yikes.
Both because it's nightmare fuel and because I feel like it is not the strongest cinematic showing.
Yeah,
in general.
And like the weird part where they tried to make Indy the villain temporarily. I mean,
yeah.
It was to show this the friendship between him and Short Round. Okay, fine.
And but the like, power of the
and
cult.
And the power of their cult. But it was also just kind of like, but he's the hero. I just don't.
It made it too dark.
It did.
It veers too far into
it was
the
too
dark.
Much. It
too
was too
often.
Much.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I would say this franchise could be also considered like for a younger audience. It's like, I would say. You know what I mean? Like it's not like you have to be an adult to see it. It's like, of course, it's like action, it's adventure stuff. Mm-hmm. There's gonna be kids
who
want to see this.
Yeah,
because I mean, we were watching it. That made you dream about being an archaeologist. Made me later on very appreciate Harrison Ford.
That's fair. All valid.
Yeah. So yeah, there's gonna be younger ish people watching this, and they're gonna be like. But Indy.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know if this book exists, but I want like an Indiana Jones companion for like kids. So that.
There's your first bestseller.
I know. One day. I'll get around to it. But that kind of like takes you through, like has maps in it and like takes you through like the story, the real history.
I want to read that.
The like real story, you know, kind of like name drops and gives context to like some of the other archaeologists that he talks about, because he talks about like real people who really wrote books, and like he talks about, you know, real places and things like that. So I feel like something like that would be the way that I would like introduce kids to this particular franchise, is with like a companion that kind of like grounds it a little bit more. And I think that makes it a little less scary and also a little more like educational, kind of balances out the like the sensationalism both of the 80s and of the 30s that they were setting the story in, because that's a lot of sensationalism like piled on top of each other. So I feel like that would be helpful, especially with this movie, more so than the others, even.
Very.
You know, like, yes, there should be a chapter on Hitler, but there should also be like a giant section on India. Huge.
Huge. Most of the book, I would say.
Yeah. I got a lot to say. Maybe it's a book series, one for every movie.
Why not?
In my mind. I'll just set that up as my new life project.
Okay. I support you.
But I think that like that helps me feel a little bit better about this movie, is like I have put it in its cultural and historical context, and I just say like they were people who were not experts, regardless of what Steven Spielberg thought when he hired them. They were not experts working on this movie, and they maybe did not take the advice that was offered to them when like the Indian government.
As you said the Indian government shut it down, I was like,
yeah, that should be a clue
to me. If I was the director, I'd be like, we need to shut it down and we need to either do this correctly or we need to
pick something else.
Pick a different place where we can, where we have more knowledge.
Yeah.
Or something.
Stick to your wheelhouse, guys.
Because, for fuck's sake.
It was rough going. This is, it's an experience. If you only remember the movie as, like, from watching it as a kid, like, I recommend going back and watching it again. Because I think it's different when you watch it as an adult to when you watch it as a kid. And then maybe immediately, like, do some Googling.
Lots of Googling.
Do a lot of reading. Because I think this one has, like, the most sort of extra heavy lifting that's asked of the audience to gain from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really have to do some work. And that makes it a little rough.
A tad.
Just a tad. But I still love Indiana Jones. I still love Harrison Ford. I'm hoping that Short Round's going to show up in the fifth movie because they can't put, well, we'll get there. But I have dreams and hopes for the fifth movie that I hope are at least somewhat fulfilled. And some of them rely on this film. So for that, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
On to happier things.
We're going to not give that any stones, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just part of
maybe
a series.
Maybe half a stone.
The second movie is always rough in a trilogy. And this one is a really good example.
Switch up writers and all that.
Yeah.
So, moving on.
Yes, we'll move on to happier things. Last Crusade is a fabulous movie. So, that's what's coming up next. You really can't be. I'm going to try really hard not to do my Sean Connery impression during that episode.
I was just thinking that.
My Sean Connery is terrible. So I'm just going to put it on the shelf and not subject anyone to it. You can do yours, though, if you would like.
No. It's a bad idea for everybody.
But that's what we're going to talk about next time. So it's definitely a roller coaster. Like you said, it goes up and then it goes down and then it's going to go up again and then it's going to go down again a little bit. So that's what we have to look forward to.
I'll bring the whiskey.
Less so for this movie than for the next one.
Yeah.
We've got a bright spot ahead.
Yeah, we do. So stoked about that.
So. Yes. So go and watch. And they're still on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
All four. So if you haven't been watching them along with us, you still have time. And we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about Last Crusade. I'm very excited.
Me too.
This is such a fun movie. Yay. I'm going to end on a high note. Yay.
Yay.
Okay. We'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.